intimacy and commitment on a new level. You could change your mind. Tonight, rest. Born today, writer Ivan Turgenev, 1818, actress-inventor Hedy Lamarr, 1914, astronomer Carl Sagan, 1934.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, magazines on the Women's Hour, followed by the Center's Solutions Podcast at 11.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 53 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Coronavirus updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 10 a.m.
Yo. Here we go.
You got a marvelous vibe, and I know it starts from inside. So fill your heart with pride, and let your light shine brightly, yo, don't hide. You're a work of art, unforgettable and off the charts.
Welcome to a podcast dedicated to your mental health. I'm Bailey with the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hi, I'm Christy Edwards. I'm the executive director and a therapist at Centers for Children and Families.
Hi, I'm Melanie Size. I'm the marketing and development director at Centers for Children and Families.
Together, we're bringing you tips and tricks on how to navigate this thing called life. This is Center Solutions. Due to the nature of some of the topics that are discussed, listener discretion is advised.
Yo. Here we go.
You got a marvelous vibe, and I know it starts from inside. So fill your heart with pride, and let your light shine brightly, yo, don't hide. You're a work of art, unforgettable and off the charts.
Welcome to a podcast dedicated to your mental health. I'm Bailey with the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hi, I'm Christy Edwards. I'm the executive director and a therapist at Centers for Children and Families.
Hi, I'm Melanie Size. I'm the marketing and development director at Centers for Children and Families.
Together, we're bringing you tips and tricks on how to navigate this thing called life. This is Center Solutions. Due to the nature of some of the topics that are discussed, listener discretion is advised.
We have some exciting news to share with our listeners today. We as a team have won Excellence in Collaboration through the Nonprofit Management Center Beacon Awards. So this is something that is really important to us because we've worked really hard, you guys, and we did it.
Yeah. Yes, we won. It's for our podcast, Center Solutions, which reaches out to a lot of other nonprofits within the community and different members of the community. So we're very excited. We're happy to be able to have this podcast every week and share some information about how everything touches mental health.
Yes, and I believe they had a couple of judges from within the community, right, who voted for us.
Yes.
Yeah, so that feels good that there's people supporting us out there. And if you followed us from the start, thank you for joining us on our this adventure. And if this is your first time, please continue to stay with us because we have a lot of great things planned.
Yes, we do. And starting with our podcast for today, we have a special guest on our Center Solutions podcast. We are talking about the plant-based diet, nutrition, and the mental health effect. Our guest is Valerie Acosta. She is the executive director of Healthy City. Welcome, Valerie. Thank you for joining us.
And thank you for having me. I'm very excited to come and visit with you guys today.
Yeah, so excited to have you. Valerie's a very good friend of mine, so that makes it a super special time for us today. So we are going to be talking about a special diet, plant-based diet. It's a diet way of life. I'll let Valerie explain some of that and what Healthy City is doing for our community. but I just want to begin by letting our audience know, always consult your doctor before beginning any health or habit-changing program. So, Valerie, do you want to tell us about what Healthy City is?
Of course I do. So, Healthy City is a fairly new nonprofit in our community. They first formed and got their 501c3 designation from the IRS. Their mission is to raise awareness about whole plant-based food diets and increase education on how to improve overall health and prevent and reverse the most common disease processes. What's really unique about Healthy City is that we have several what we call medical doctors or medical directors who are doctors who have taken this on as a passion in their own practice and live it, breathe it, and even encourage their patients to follow this to help reverse a lot of your common diseases that you're seeing primarily in the United States because of our standard American diet. So they do a lot of education, do a conference once a year, minus, you know, 2020 COVID year, where they have upwards of 600 participants coming from our community and communities around here, even out of state, to learn about food as medicine. So that's been their primary program that they've had, but they continue to add on community meals, events, cooking demonstrations, education webinars, and speaking with a lot of the influencers in the whole food plant-based realm. And when I say whole food plant-based, it doesn't mean vegan. And that's
right. And you're going to, yes, Valerie's going to explain some of that. I got the opportunity to attend a community-based meal, and it was a pretty neat community event. Of course, now during COVID, some of that's limited, but tell us a little bit about the differences between plant-based, and there's so many different variations, right?
Well, yeah, you'll hear plant-based, you'll hear whole food plant-based, you'll hear vegan, you'll hear vegetarian. So vegetarian is what most people are, a vegetarian does not eat meat. They eat dairy and they eat eggs for the most part. And then you go, next step would be vegan. And a vegan is someone that does not eat any animal products. They don't consume it in food form and clothing and any products that come from animal base. So they're really on the ethical side of why they don't use these products is because of the ethical thoughts of killing for their consumption. Whole food plant-based and plant-based are very similar. The difference is plant-based, you're going to eat a lot of the same things as a vegan would without the moral implications of everything. And whole foods are really looking at making sure that they're having whole, unrefined plants, including fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, while eliminating advertising meat, poultry, fish, dairy products, eggs, highly refined sugars, enriched flours, processed foods, and oils. So you're saying, well, what do they eat? But what it is that you're really focusing on not what you can't eat, but really reaching towards those plants as your main source of nutrition.
Okay, so I guess what you're saying, Valerie, is it's a lot of not so much focusing on the deprivation factor, but going towards things that you actually need, that nutrition that we're looking for, and finding it in plants, right?
I mean, if you really think about it, it's eating the things that you know that are healthy for you in general. Vegetables, fruits, whole grains, nuts, seeds, your beans, your lentils, drinking water, you know, the things that you know are going to fuel your body at the at its optimal amount.
Sure.
Yes.
So I've been dabbling a little bit, I have to say, and I call myself veganish, and I think Valerie wants to smack me when I say that because it has no value. It makes no sense. I invented it for myself. It means nothing. So if you ever hear me say that, it means nothing. It's just totally invented.
But, I've heard people call themselves baby vegans. They're in the infantile stage of being a vegan.
I didn't realize that vegan had such an attachment to animal protection, and that because I think we hear these terms and they get used a lot and thrown around a lot, and they're almost kind of trendy.
if you will. And so, you know, being vegan just sounded to me like you don't have animal products, but it's more than that. It's your shoes, and I had no idea. So I've learned a lot just by listening to Valerie explain all this to me, and it's really quite interesting. So, in tying in some of the mental health part, I collected a little bit of nutrition psychiatry data for us. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is the CDC, we're all way more familiar with the CDC than we ever thought we would need to be, did estimate that about 50% of Americans would be diagnosed with a mental health condition at some point during their lives. As of 2018, mental illnesses such as depression have been the third most common cause of hospitalization in the United States for those aged 18 to 44 years old. Now, if you think about it, that was 2018 statistic. Things have changed drastically since COVID has, you know, reared its ugly head. So now we have a whole different perspective on mental health. We always make that comment, right, Christy, that we've never been more aware of our mental health than exactly. 2020. Mm-hmm. So elevated levels of adverse mental health conditions, substance abuse, suicidal ideation were reported by adults in the United States in June of 2020. We've talked about that in other podcasts. There's just the heightened awareness and a greater instance of mental health issues and illnesses. The last decade of a Columbia University study has shown that the risk of depression increases about 80% when you compare teens with the lowest quality diet, or what we like to call, or the Western diet, to those who eat a higher quality whole foods diet. The study also indicates that the risk of attention deficit disorder doubles. So it's really interesting. And Christy, we've talked about this a lot. There's so much of the connection from mental health to physical health is just, it's hand in hand, right?
It absolutely is. And, you know, what we've known for years is that those go hand in hand, and yet mental health always took a backseat to physical health, because you could go to the doctor and you could get a pill, or you could get stitched up, or you could have a surgery, and, you know, whatever was the most serious illness would be able to be taken care of. What we're talking about is just that long-term chronic combination of, if they're not in sync, that's whenever we have a problem.
Yeah, and so we talk a lot about all of the factors, you know, just making sure your physical health is in check, mm-hmm. Eating well, exercise, but healthy diet affects your brain for sure.
And I know that you know, at the beginning, Melanie, you and Valerie both said, you know, we're not promoting any type of diet that would be super restrictive, and that's not what we're trying to do here. We are trying to say, whatever diet that has the, for years we've known the healthier foods to eat, right? So what we're saying is, those things that you will consume that cause an uptick in your health. I mean, it boosts your brain development. You know, it, you know, makes, promotes good gut bacteria. All of those things that make you feel better because you are better. You know, and we also know that, you know, changing your diet can help with, you know, your chemicals, the chemical imbalances in your body. So, you know, you want to raise your serotonin levels, you know, through various foods. So once again, we're not saying we want you to restrict. We are saying we want you to recognize healthy foods, whether they're, you know, whole food, you know, vegan, whether they're, you know, heavy on the protein side. If you're eating mostly healthy, you're going to feel better physically and mentally. And those are things that we know from the time we're very young. And, you know, we kind of get away from that. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring people back around and say, especially during COVID, as Melanie says, we're more aware of our mental health than we've ever been. So what we as therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists and medical doctors are saying, get enough sleep, get enough exercise, get out in the sun, eat a salad, right? Eat something healthy. These are the tried and true things that will make you feel better, that will give you an upswing in your mood. So it has, you know, It has nothing to do with anybody preaching one thing over the other. It's if you're generally trying to do better.
It's 100% it's an alternative, and it works for a lot of people. And a lot of people have great testimonials. Of course, we'll give the information on the website later. There are a lot of awesome people in our community that have excellent testimonials from this type, from this way of living. And it really is a way of life.
Yeah, and what we're looking for is for people to find that healthy way of living that works for them. And you're not going to know what works for you unless you give some things a try.
Sure.
Right? So it's like, this is a tried and true. It is a way of life for many people who will swear by it. And just give it a try. Listen to, you know, like you said, listen to the testimonials. If it's something that you think that you can do, give it a shot. It's like, you know, I'm never going to run a 5K, but I'm going to walk 2 miles every day. So, you know, it's like, take bits and pieces of it or go all in.
Yes, absolutely. So some of the things I think that are, part of the questions about, plant-based is, I think a lot of people have, there are some misconceptions, and I think I'm just going to go and switch over to that. For example, nutrients and minerals that you'll be able to get. I know that there's such a connection, and as I've mentioned, we have discussed this in other podcasts. Just, there are things that we can be low on, deficiencies that have an effect on our mental health. And so there's a list of some things that are just pretty directed toward, that are pretty connected to mental health. And this is not all, but they're just some examples. Like, for example, zinc. And it's interesting because we hear a lot about zinc right now during COVID, that people are encouraged to, you know, consider that in their, you know, vitamin regimen every day, because that's something that they've realized some COVID patients have a deficiency in. And so apparently low levels of zinc can actually lead to depression. I have, there are some different foods that are plant-based, but Valerie, I don't know if you want to take a look at some of these and just kind of elaborate, because I know sometimes, and I'm sure you get this question, plant-based diet almost does seem restrictive. Now, in talking to the people that I know in that world, it really just takes a lot of learning and study, because you really can live a life of purely plant-based diet.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's weird for people to say, you know, that it's restrictive whenever there's 1,097 different vegetable species in the world.
It's really right. Not restrictive
and,
at
and
all.
And 2,000 different fruits. So, I mean, just those two items alone, you know, there's, you know, all kinds of opportunities. Yeah, but a lot of, you know, what you're going to eat, I don't want to use the word diet, but a lot of what you're going to eat is going to be fruits and vegetables, beans, chickpeas, lentils. You're going to have oatmeal. You're going to eat. One of my favorite things that I have learned about is chia seed, and its benefits in your diet is amazing, from these little bitty seeds, and they are amazing what they can do to a food. There's, you know, you're going to eat your different grains, quinoa. That's something that I learned about, you know, going plant-based. And all your different grains. So it's hard for me to say it's restrictive. Now, you know, is it harder for me to go out and eat at a restaurant? Yeah, I'm going to look at the menu ahead of time. I'm going to know what I can eat at places. But generally, I can eat sides till my, you know, until my sides fall. You know, you can usually find and make things accommodate what you're eating. And our restaurants in Midland are becoming more and more accepting of their clientele going to a whole food plant-based diet and creating at least one menu item. I only need to eat one thing when I go. So if restaurants have that on there, I know what I'm going to eat every time I go there. So,
yeah, and, yeah. You know, Valerie, this is Christy. I just kind of want to clarify, whenever I'm talking about a restrictive diet, I'm talking about restricting intake for, you know, in mental health, it's, you know, people that have some type of eating disorder, you know, whenever they look at that and they're going, okay, that's inconvenient. So that way, then I'm limited. Mm-hmm. And so somebody's telling me that. So yeah, I'm not talking about restrictive as in, you know, the opportunity for a wide variety. I'm talking, we want to be careful for people who feel like that means they have to restrict
Yeah, the beautiful thing about plant-based diet and the hardest thing I have is that I have to eat more to get my calories in for my day.
There you go. It's like you said, you get to enjoy that to your side split, right?
Or exactly. Yes. Yeah. I mean,
that's great.
You know, one of my favorite things to get protein is broccoli. People don't realize mm-hmm. that broccoli has protein in it. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, if I were to eat, what is it, like the 2,000, calories in broccoli, I would have like 130 grams of protein for that day. And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're calorie poor, but you're nutrient dense. So you have mm-hmm. more of everything. So I know people get very, they do it in their own mind though, I believe. They think, well,
you're
I can't
right.
eat this, and this. I'm going to stay with the same portion of vegetables I normally ate. No, honey, you need to times that by five, please. So,
thanks for
getting your calories.
Clarification is important. So thank you for that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think one important takeaway for anyone listening, whether or not this is for you, is it really is a good idea to increase your vegetable intake. That's something that we all need. And I think we get kind of trapped in getting busy and, you know,
mm-hmm.
fast food restaurants, processed foods, easy stuff, frozen, whatever.
Convenient, yeah.
That's kind of what, yeah, we're very convenience, world of convenience kind of nation. And so, it takes a little time. It takes something called intuitive eating, which I think is another important thing for people to learn. And it's paying attention to what you're putting into your body and taking the time to really enjoy it. So, I mean, I'd like to think I've dabbled a little bit, and I really think I feel a lot better when I'm increasing the levels of fruits and vegetables and less processed foods. I do notice that I feel better. So that's different. Now, I'm not like all the way, but I think everyone can benefit from taking in a little bit more healthy food into their diet. Some of the nutrients and minerals that help with brain health, that we tend to be deficient in sometimes is zinc, omega-3s, vitamin C, iron, vitamin D. And let's face it, we need to really start thinking I hate to keep saying we need to. I mean, obviously we can all do what we want to do. But right now that we're in the middle of a pandemic, there's not a lot we can control.
Mm-hmm.
We can try to do our best and follow protocols. But one thing we can really do for ourselves and our families is try to build up our immunity, and we can do that by taking care of our physical health.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to have an overflow in our mental health. I mean, gosh, Christy, how many times do we talk about vitamin D and seasonal affective disorder?
Almost every podcast. Up in some
yes.
way that we talk about,
yeah.
you know, whenever, you know, and I think most people do know that I had COVID, back at the end of June, and my doctor was like, you have to get outside for at least 20 minutes a day. So, you know, that wasn't the same as taking penicillin if I had strep throat, but it was, he stressed the importance of that. He stressed the importance of healthy eating through that. So these mm-hmm. are, you know, getting enough sleep. So we could say the same four things over and over about almost everything that's physical and mental.
Yes. And so it's a really good time to start thinking about, you know, maybe I want to make some changes. Mm-hmm. Maybe I want to make some changes for my kids. Maybe I don't want to, mm-hmm. you know, have chicken nuggets every day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just part of, we're all trying to do our best as, you know, for ourselves and for our families, but sometimes it takes just a moment to be a little bit mindful about it, because just like anything else, I think we can become cruise control about our diet, you know, and diet meaning our daily intake of food.
Mm-hmm.
Not
so true.
And
I would like to ask Valerie a question. Someone like myself who might be interested in starting a plant-based diet, how do you get started?
It depends on what kind of personality you are. You know, are you an all-in? You know, if you were a smoker, would you just quit or would you stair-step? You know, those kinds of things. You know, if you're a stair-stepper, I would say start with Meatless Mondays, and just have it one day where you focus on adding more fruits and vegetables and replace of whatever meat, dairy, or egg you would eat at that time. So you can start that way and just incorporate it, get your family more used to eating those kinds of meals, making sure that each Monday you're trying new recipes, and before long you're going to be using those recipes throughout the week, not just on Mondays. So that's one way to do it. I, on the other hand, was a, I saw a documentary and go, okay, I'm done. And it really was one of those things that really flipped a switch in my brain, and I was 100% committed. And I know not everybody's going to do that, and there's no right way. The only right way is the right way for you. So I would say either try, you know, just replacing one meal and seeing what you can do. I really like to follow a lot of different influencers on social media that are plant-based, that provide a lot of different menu items, different types of food. You know, the thing with eating whole food plant-based is you get to eat a lot more ethnic foods. You know, you're going to get a lot more Indian food. Yeah, Mexican food can even be whole food plant-based. I follow a lady out of Del Rio, and she does an amazing tamale recipe, you know, completely whole food plant-based. So, I mean, you know, if you do social media, look at different influencers, just type it in, you know, hashtag whole food plant-based and see what comes up. If you want me to plug my favorite, her name is High Carb Hannah, and she has incredible easy recipes. And she was the person that I found out that we don't have to be ashamed of eating potatoes anymore. You can eat all the potatoes you want.
Oh, amen. Amen to that. I love potatoes.
I'm also interested.
I actually listened to Mona Vand. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she's, well, I say listen to. She, I think she's a podcast. She's on YouTube. And she's on TikTok, which I kind of, you know, I'm not going to, I'm coming out, I'm on TikTok, okay, people? I know I'm old. But I love it for the recipes, because I think any other platform you have to go through and listen to a story or, you know, read a lot of stuff. And TikTok is so quick. You can get that recipe really quick and fast, and that's totally up my alley. So mm-hmm. I really love that idea. And you do get to learn a little bit more about other, I mean, you can buy different, I don't know, nutritional yeast. That was my learning experience. So it's interesting. Didn't know that was a thing, but it's a thing, and you put it on everything and it's good.
you know, for mental health, I'm obviously not an expert or anything, but I do think that hobbies are very important and, you know, in learning, and that can help your mental health. And learning to cook a new way can be exciting. It can keep you interested. It can almost become a passion, you know, that you're learning something new, a new way, and it's exciting once you start to learn what you can do and share it with friends and family, and hopefully they'll be receptive and not turn their nose up at it. But it's amazing, like I said, what you could do and what things actually taste better once you eliminate the things we've been told we need to have all the time. So I want to go back and say, you know, you mentioned all of the nutrients and minerals that we need, but one of them that wasn't mentioned was fiber, and we get plenty of fiber through our whole food plant-based diets. And without getting too graphic, let's just say it's pleasant how much you get. So, and it's interesting because your gut health is completely attached to your brain health, because
1,000%. Yes.
Because your gut is attached, you know, through that vein, directly to your brain. So, definitely having your gut in check is going to help too in, keeping you, mentally healthy.
That's true. And hey, if you're a little constipated, you're not very happy. That's the
answer. Amen to that.
That does not make for a very happy person. So, yeah, and I think, I mean, that's just when your stomach isn't feeling well, and a lot of times, we have something coming up here in November. It's the day that we celebrate being gratitude while binging. Thanksgiving. So if ever there's a day for having gut issues, I think that would be the day.
Mm-hmm.
You say?
For sure.
Yeah, I think anything we can do to try to boost our gut health and our, you know, vitamin D,
vitamin B, all of those things that help promote good brain health, good mental health, is going to help us be a little bit more well-rounded at a time in our lives when mental health, we need to do whatever we can to super take care of our mental health. Right, Christy?
You know, I'm sorry, my brain was going whenever you guys were talking about gut health. And I've been thinking about all of the podcasts that we've done with anybody that had anything to do with, you know, physical health, like, you know, Stephanie Moses, you know, doctor, I forgot your doctor's name, Melanie, that came on.
Now you made me forget.
Summer Merritt.
Summer Merritt.
I mean, everybody is talking about your gut health, how important all that is, and that, you know, it's as simple as taking a probiotic or having enough fiber. So that was what I was thinking, so I'm sorry that I got lost on the podcast.
No, it's true, though. I mean, gut health has become, people are realizing the importance of it and the importance of probiotics and how all of that stuff is just connected to the rest of your body and your brain and inflammation and all of, you know, keeping control on all of those high alert items that could cause like real health issues later. It's just, we can do it a little bit with nutrition.
Yeah, and we often get asked, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? So it's like, does mental health make your physical health better or physical health make your mental health better? And it really goes hand in hand. So what you've got to do is you have to decide which area is going to be easiest for you, you know, to kind of readjust or reclaim as your own health. And when you start down that road, you're going to find that they're interconnected and it makes it easier to take care of both.
Yes. I think, that's when you think about if you're depressed, it's a good time to go into your doctor, and before you just ask for a prescription, make sure that you're not having some sort of mineral deficiency or there's something else going on. I mean, it's not just, I think it's a good time to have a well-rounded conversation with your doctor, not just when you're considering a new diet, but whether it's a new exercise plan, making sure you check your blood levels and everything else going on before you go into prescription medication. It's good to be your own advocate ultimately.
Well, just think about the last time you went to your primary care doctor. And, you know, they basically are like, you know, what symptoms are you having? You know, you tell them. Rarely do they go into, okay, so let's talk a little bit about, you know, your emotional well-being. So unless you bring it up, still, some of them do not go there. And so what we want to do is we want to, you know, have this whole, you know, mind, body, soul experience, because we are now so connected with our emotional well-being that a doctor would say, okay, we've talked about that, so now tell me what's going on here. Are you getting enough sleep? Are you eating healthy? Are you having any emotional distress? Right now, they're not asking those questions. Not all of them. Some of them very much are, but not all of them are.
That's true. So, Valerie, what I'm wondering if you could leave us with a favorite easy recipe that we can all try.
Well, everybody likes pancakes and waffles, don't they? And I've already shared this one with you, but I was making this weekend for Kai, and I was like, it's only takes 5 minutes to prep it up. It's all done in your blender, so it's very, not much mess, and it only has one unusual ingredient, which we've already talked about, nutritional yeast, and it's easy to find. Nutritional yeast, ask your local grocer. Everybody carries it. But natural grocers and natural foods definitely are.
H-E-B has it. I can attest to that.
So I know that Market Street carries it also. So it's definitely, that's the only unusual ingredient in it, but it is 1.5 cups of rolled oats, 2 very ripe spotty bananas, you know, the riper the sweeter, 1 teaspoon of your nutritional yeast, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, and 1/2 cup of water. And you're going to just put that in a blender and blend it up for about 30 seconds on high until it's very smooth. And then just go ahead and put it on, you know, your skillet, your hot skillet, about a quarter cup of the batter will make a great pancake. I use it in our waffle maker all the time. I will use, when I'm making it for Kai, a lot of times I throw in some, dairy-free, chocolate chips in there, because of course I gotta make it sweet for her. But yeah. She does not even use like syrup on her pancakes normally, so that's why I do that for her. But you can of course cook them up, put your pure maple syrup on it, or else, you know, make some coconut whipped cream, which is super easy. You just get a 14-ounce can of, coconut cream and then put it in the fridge or freezer, fridge it for a little bit to get it nice and cold. And then you whip it with, anywhere from a quarter to three quarters cup of powdered sugar. And if you want to put a little vanilla extract, it's perfect. It whips right up, put it in your mixer. Yeah. So.
Okay. So that's coconut cream. That's not coconut milk from a can, is it?
No, it's a can of coconut cream. So it comes in, it looks like you can get coconut milk or coconut cream. Okay. You can do the full fat coconut milk, but I like to do the cream. But anyway, but you put it in the fridge overnight. It gets nice cold next day. Put it in a mixing bowl and let it just sort of hang out, and then add the sugar and that mixture, and you mix it up. It's perfect. So.
That sounds great. Thank you for sharing that.
Put some berries on your, your pancakes or whatever, or your waffles. Yeah. I mean, it's an easy, super, and foolproof. It always tastes great. I mean, you're going to taste the bananas in it, but who doesn't like the taste of bananas? So,
that's awesome. So I think we all need to make those, and then, I don't know, pair it with a mimosa.
Yeah. And can you find resources on your website, Valerie?
Yes, our website. I mean, and this is, I am their first employee, and I've only been here since mid-August, and they have done an amazing job with their website. There are all kinds of different webinars, recipes, resources, and it's OurHealthyCity.com.
Yes, and it also has a section on how to get started if you're interested in more information. And there's, you can take a look at, I think it talks about grocery tours, which is interesting.
Yes,
so I can definitely check into that and learn about something that our city's doing. I love that we get to learn about things that are going on in our own community that a lot of us normally would not know about. So,
yeah.
That's one of the coolest things about our award-winning podcast.
We need to get that out on our Facebook page, don't we?
Yes, 100%. So
Valerie, because I write slow, I want to go over this. I would like for you to go over the recipe for the pancakes one more time, in case there's any of our listeners that were trying to write it down and might not have had a chance to get a pen.
Okay,
pen in hand.
Uh-huh.
1.5 cups of rolled oats.
Okay.
Two bananas. Super ripe, spotty, the ones you're about to throw out or fool. Want those.
Gotcha.
1 teaspoon of nutritional yeast. 1/4 teaspoon salt. 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, and 1/2 cup of water.
Thank you for that. That I saw those. Yeah.
And it makes about 6 pancakes, so.
That's so great. I can't wait to share that recipe on our program called Cooking in the Dark for our visually impaired listeners.
That's great. Yeah.
We're actually about to start a program where we're going to ask people to send in their recipes their favorite recipes that they cook for the holidays. So we're going to ask people to record those and send those to us so we can share those with our visually impaired listeners. So I can't wait to share that recipe, Valerie.
Oh, wonderful. That makes me so happy. Yay. Thank you.
Great. Yeah. Well, thank you, Valerie, so much for joining us, and I hope a lot of people have learned something. We'll head over to your website and learn a lot more.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Valerie.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Center Solutions is a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. Post-production work is done by Bailey Hennis. Content is provided by Melanie Size and Christy Edwards. Contact Centers for Children and Families at 432-432-4000. 570-1084 or the Recording Library, 432-682-2731. Email Melanie with questions you want answered on the show at msize@centerstexas.org. That's msize@centerstx.org. Both nonprofits are on all social media platforms. See you next time.
Starting Tuesday on the Noon Book Hour, we continue our Thanksgiving series with Turkey Day Murder by Leslie Meyer. Tinker's Cove, Maine has a long history of Thanksgiving festivities, from visits with Tom Tom Turkey to the annual Warriors High School football game and Lucy Stone's impressive pumpkin pie. But this year, someone has added murder to the menu, and Lucy intends to discover who left Matinicut Indian activist Kurt Nolan dead with an ancient war club next to his head. The list of suspects isn't brief. Nolan had a habit of disagreeing with just about everybody. Between fixing dinner for 12 and keeping her four kids from tearing each other limb from limb, Lucy has a pretty full plate already. So what's a little investigation? But if she's not careful, she may find herself served up as a last-minute course, stone cold dead with all the trimmings. Turkey Day Murder by Leslie Meyer, starting Tuesday at noon and Wednesday at 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Because our regularly scheduled program was not available at broadcast time, we bring you the following special presentation.
This program is made available to the IAAIS program share and was recorded at the audio reading service of the Owen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is the Prevention Magazine program, and I'm your reader, Adrienne Booker, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Prevention Magazine's November issue. And now I'll begin with the editor's note entitled Happiness and Hope by Sarah Smith. I'm thinking we should all share some good news with one another right now. How about you? In one of the weekly meetings I attend, we each take a minute to talk about something we're proud of from the previous week. The contributions have ranged from I gave up caffeine, to I double-checked my voter registration, to I learned to drive a tractor mower. That was me. In that spirit, here are a few highlights from this issue that we hope will make you feel good. Mocktails are genius. Let's toast to fun drinks with no tomorrow morning side effects. Try our favorites on page 76. If you live with a snore, we can help you sleep. We asked experts about ways to shut out noise, and if you need that, I know you need it badly, so get yourself to page 68. It's possible to reverse prediabetes. I hate to give away the ending to a great story, on page 56, but I'm just so happy for our writer Laura Shen, who got a scary diagnosis and took action. Stress is not going to win. The holidays are tough for a lot of people, especially in this year of change. I'm proud of our thoughtful guide to navigating tricky situations with family on page 34. I hope it helps you. What about you? What's your good news? Share it by emailing letters@prevention.com. I'd love to feature some of you in an upcoming issue. I'll now be reading a brief article in Prevention's Pulse section entitled, Reminder, Get Your Flu Shot. It's always a good idea to get pricked during flu season. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that everyone 6 months and older get vaccinated. And with COVID-19 still an issue, it's even more critical to do everything possible to protect yourself from getting sick at all. Getting a flu shot is extremely important and helpful in potentially preventing flu sickness, especially this year, because healthcare resources are already stretched and anxiety and uncertainty around the coronavirus are rampant, says Ian Smith, MD, host of The Doctors. It can take up to 2 weeks after vaccination for your body to build up the necessary antibodies to protect you from getting sick. So check with your local pharmacy to see when it will start offering the shot. I'll now be reading an article from the science section of prevention entitled Vote for Health by Merrill Davids Landau. This year, the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, your health is on the ballot. Scientific research which leads to better prevention and new treatments does not have to be partisan and has not always been so. Here's why it's important to put it at the forefront of your choices. Women have always considered many factors when voting, but this election, health care is top of mind. I say it all the time now. Vote health care, vote health care, vote health care, says Cindy Pearson, Executive Director of the National Women's Health Network, NWHN, a nonprofit advocacy group in Washington, D.C. So much of our health is affected by what our elected officials do. Getting affordable insurance, contraception, and screenings depends on this, as does having access to doctors who understand the unique ways in which conditions like heart disease affect women. Reproductive rights and racial disparities in the system are likewise on the ballot. It's more important than ever that women support people who prioritize women's health, says Congresswoman Nita Lowey, a rep from New York, who is retiring after more than 30 years. We cannot take that for granted. Legislating for women's health. In some ways, the link between government and well-being is clear. Medicare and Medicaid are federal programs that help millions of women, and we know that the Affordable Care Act, ACA, aka Obamacare, expanded insurance coverage. The ACA was particularly transformational for women, says Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, who represents the area around New Haven, Connecticut. The law eliminated co-pays for birth control, mammograms, and annual visits, made it illegal to charge women higher premiums, as had been standard practice, and forced companies to cover pre-existing conditions. Those conditions had included pregnancy, breast and ovarian cancer, osteoporosis, and more, she says. But a lot more is going on in government that concerns women's bodies. For instance, Congress directs how much the National Institute of Health, NIH, spends each year to research breast cancer, autoimmune disorders, reproductive health, and more, says Susan F. Wood, Ph.D., director of the Jacobs Institute of Women's Health at the George Washington University School of Public Health. Sometimes elected officials make women's health a priority, as they did in the 1990s, when hundreds of millions of dollars flowed into the Women's Health Initiative, WHI, a 15-year study that examined how hormone replacement therapy, diet, and certain supplements impacted postmenopausal health. When legislators don't focus on women's needs, important research, such as on endometriosis, which affects 1 in 10 women, but about which little is known, goes unfunded. And it's the president who appoints the executives who run those agencies, as did George H.W. Bush when the WHI was started, and who nominates Supreme Court justices who decide the fate of many health laws. Choices like these that are made behind closed doors may feel distant, says Sarah Christofferson, Policy Advocacy Director for the National Women's Health Network, but the consequences can be life or death. A recent study in women's health issues found that states that expanded Medicaid under the ACA had fewer maternal deaths than those that didn't, with non-Hispanic black mothers benefiting most. Maternal mortality is one of the many areas in which black women fare worse than white ones, something elected representatives could address by funding research to understand why, Wood says. Whom we vote for affects even how new drugs are tested. It was not until the early 1990s that women in Congress made sure clinical pharmaceutical trials included women as well as men. Crucial, as women may metabolize drugs differently and require different dosages. I remember when all the clinical trials were done on men, even the lab rats were male, says Lowey, who worked with colleagues to insist that NIH trials include women. Amazingly, scientists didn't need to include female animals in government-funded research until 2016. Even today, not all researchers follow the policy. A 2018 analysis, for example, found that women weren't adequately included in drug trials for heart failure and coronary artery disease, despite the fact that heart disease remains the number one killer of women. Even a single politician at the local level can make a difference, says Pearson, who points to one female state senator in California who recently pushed through a requirement that hospital staff be trained in the implicit racial bias that harms women of color. Politicizing science. Having scientific evidence take a backseat to other considerations is not new. FDA officials appointed by George W. Bush, for example, prevented emergency contraception, known as Plan B, from being made available without a prescription, despite evidence that it was safe. It was finally allowed to be sold partially over the counter as of 2006. We shouldn't have to worry that someone is influencing decisions based strictly on financial or political reasons, says Wood. But over the past decade, as partisan politics have grown even more divisive, some elected officials seem downright dismissive of science and facts, say health advocates. There has been a trend toward discounting evidence and experts, says Michael Fernandez, director of the Center for Scientific Evidence in Public Issues at the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS. A nonprofit advocacy group in Washington, D.C. The AAAS created the center in 2018, he says, because decision makers too often ignore, misunderstand, or misuse relevant evidence. Elected officials can disagree, for instance, about whether companies should be required to cover birth control, but they shouldn't argue that contraception doesn't reduce the risk of unintended pregnancy, as did the Trump administration. It's fine to have a political argument, but we should at least agree that certain things are true, Fernandez says. A willingness to dismiss science was particularly evident during the current administration's response to COVID-19, DeLauro says. Officials first downplayed the reality of its rapid spread, then offered misinformation about treatments. By summer, the U.S. had the highest number of deaths in the world as other countries slowed the spread. Anti-science bias has also lurked behind other recent decisions. At the Environmental Protection Agency, for instance, a pending rule would allow staffers to ignore important scientific findings when crafting regulations that could impact our health, such as those affecting toxins in the air and water. Voters have a responsibility to understand not only what kinds of decisions their leaders are making, but also how they're making them and whether they're appropriately incorporating scientific evidence into their decision-making processes, Fernandez says. If Congress looked different. While politicians who vote on your values can be any gender, Pearson and others believe we would all benefit if more women were elected. Currently, only a quarter of U.S. House and Senate members are women. While not every female politician is a strong supporter of women's health, most are, and their very presence changes the agenda, DeLauro says, in part because of their personal experience. DeLauro, for instance, survived ovarian cancer, while Iowa Representative Abby Fichtenauer, who suffers from endometriosis, is aiming to double funding for research on the disease. Illinois Representative Lauren Underwood is a registered nurse who has seen health disparities firsthand and is pushing for expanded health care coverage. Research has confirmed that women in Congress focus on health care issues for women and children and men more than do their male counterparts, says Craig Volden, Ph.D., co-director of the Center for Effective Lawmaking at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. His research found that 65% of Congresswomen introduced bills on health, while only 48% of men did. He also found that women's bills were less likely to become law, which he speculates is because most committees and subcommittees through which agendas are set are led by men. When Lowy took over as chair of the powerful House Appropriations Committee in 2019, its spending bills contained record funding for maternal health and cancer research. So when you vote this November, and please do, think hard about the people you're supporting. You're making decisions that could directly determine the quality of health care for years to come, for your family and for you. 7 questions to ask candidates. It doesn't matter which side of the political fence you sit on. Health care is on everyone's mind for this election. In fact, a recent Gallup poll found that it was the number one concern among voters, above even the economy and national security. Before you vote, find out whether the candidates in your state are using science to inform their opinions by contacting their campaign offices and asking these questions. Number 1. How should the U.S. best prepare for current and future pandemics? 2. Do you believe contraceptives and reproductive health should be covered? 3. What could be done about the rising cost of health care? 4. Do you support the Affordable Care Act? If not, what would you replace it with? 5. How will you ensure that the science doesn't fall victim to partisan politics? 6. What are your plans to help fund research on women's health? And 7. How can the government ensure that clinical trials represent all genders and races? I'll now be reading an article in the wellness section of Prevention entitled Natural Fixes, How a Chiropractor Treats Hip Pain by Ashley Breeding. The hip is one of the central weight-bearing joints in the human body, so pain here can throw your whole body off kilter. Discomfort may be caused by physical trauma, like a fall, or by an underlying medical condition. Chiropractic, meaning to be done by hand, is a treatment that uses manual adjustment techniques on the spine to help with both, says Robert A. Hayden, D.C., Ph.D., F.I.C.C., proprietor of Irish City Chiropractic Center in Griffin, Georgia, and spokesperson for the American Chiropractic Association. Nearly half of Hayden's patients who are over 60 have hip complaints. Here, he explains how chiropractic can get the ball and socket rolling again. First, what is chiropractic? You might be surprised to learn that it's one of the largest and most regulated healthcare professions. Chiropractic focuses on musculoskeletal and nervous system disorders and how they affect your health. It's often used for headaches or pain in the neck, back, or joints. In a 2015 industry-funded study, patients who underwent chiropractic for spinal, hip, or shoulder pain reported less pain 4 months later than those who saw MDs. A bonus, their medical costs were also lower. How can a chiropractor help with hip pain? Doctors of chiropractic, DCs, use a variety of techniques including manual adjustments, exercises, electrotherapy, ultrasound, cold laser, and massage on knots and muscles. One of the most common procedures we perform is spinal manipulation or chiropractic adjustment, which restores joint mobility when we manually apply a controlled force to joints that have become restricted. In many cases, we can adjust the hip joint using a painless drop table technique. The DC lightly thrusts the bone in a way that triggers a mechanism on the table the client is resting on to drop half an inch, and gravity assists in moving the bone. This opens the joint, which creates motion and relieves pain. Deep ultrasound on surrounding muscles, infrared sauna to heat connective tissues, and exercises or stretches can also help. Okay, what is the course of treatment like? During the first session, we usually take your medical history and do a physical exam and any necessary imaging. Chiropractic care is typically non-invasive, and though you could experience mild discomfort, you will likely feel better and function more fully afterward. Many conditions can be corrected in a single visit. Chronic conditions may require multiple sessions and regular exercises, and it can take 2 or 3 weeks to start seeing results. How can I get the most out of it? Be very thorough with your history. Think of yourself as a mystery novel that needs to be unfolded in detail. Write down your meds and significant points of your medical history. Information about prior injuries, athletic activity, and any impacts of your job on the hip are especially important. Explain whether pain radiates and where it goes, as well as what makes it feel better or worse. Tell your DC about your daily routine and how the condition affects your ability to function. These things are important because our goal is to restore your function. I'll now be reading an article in Prevention's Pulse section entitled Beauty, Prettier in Pumpkin. Fall's trendiest ingredients is a hit in skincare too, thanks to its diverse nutrient profile. Topically, pumpkin is rich in benefits, says Ava Shambon, MD, a board-certified dermatologist in California. It contains vitamins that hydrate, firm, and protect the skin, anti-inflammatory compounds that soothe, and enzymes that gently exfoliate. When you're cooking for the holiday, it's easy to prep what you need for a great DIY mask too, Dr. Shambon says. Her go-to recipe is good for a week when stored in the fridge. Just don't accidentally eat it. Rejuvenating Pumpkin Mask. 2 cups of pureed or canned pumpkin, 4 tablespoons of plain